Hello, and welcome to the new episode of the Colcast. I am your host, Chris Collins. It is January the 6th of 2019. Happy New Year to everyone listening. And I just want to start off the episode with a quick apology. As you will have noticed if you've been listening to the podcast since the beginning, it's not been going for a little bit. It's been about a month and a half or so. And the only thing I can put it down to really is just problem after problem after problem. First, my phone died on me, so I needed to get a new one of those sorted. Then the microphone that I had died on me, so I needed to get a new one of those sorted. Could actually be a blessing in disguise, because now I've got a fancy new phone, fancy new microphone, everything set up, ready to go. We've had tons of interesting things happening in the fight world over the last week, so this is a perfect opportunity, especially with the new year, to come back and make the comeback episode, push hard in 2019. So apologies for the absence for a while, just getting some bits and pieces missing, tying some loose ends. But 2019, new year, new start. We're going to see a big push with the Colcast this year. I'm just going to try and bring everyone who listens to the podcast the best content that I could possibly bring. Break down things, analyse events in the fight world, upcoming events, previous events, all the news, everything that's been going on, all the happenings. I'm going to try and bring you the best content that I possibly can this year. So without further ado, let's get into the show. And I think the perfect place to start really is probably just to recap UFC 232. Obviously happened in California, Los Angeles, California, just over a week ago. And I'll say just over a week ago, last weekend. Interesting card, eh? Interesting run-up to the card as well. I'm not going to delve into that too deeply. I think everyone's broke down everything that needs to be broken down as much as can possibly be. You've probably heard all sorts of angles and different opinions from everything that's been going on, to the moving of the card, to obviously the big news story, which was John Jones testing positive again for oral turinabol. Here's my take on it. And I'll go from 115 all the way up to the heavyweights in the UFC. So you have got Joanna Jędrzejczyk, Rose Namajunas, you've had DJ, you've had Cejudo, TJ Dillashaw, Dominic Cruz, Jose Aldo, Cody Garbrandt, Conor McGregor, Tony Ferguson, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Tyron Woodley, Darren Till, Wonderboy, Nick and Nate Diaz, Bisping, Romero, Rockhold, Weidman, DC, Gustafsson, Stipe. What's the thing they all have in common? None of them have ever failed a drug test I don't think any of them actually ever failed a drug test for anything, but none of them particularly have ever failed a drug test for pulsing fucking metabolites or whatever the hell's going on with John Jones at the moment, let alone failed a test three times. Now, isn't it funny that the two consensus greatest of all time mixed martial artists, Anderson Silva and John Jones, are the ones that have been most closely tied to failed drug tests? Now, if you fail a drug test once, listen, people are popping all the time. You know, there's a good side and a bad side to the whole USADA debacle. The good side is, arguably, yes, it has cleaned up the sport. You know, people are popping for things that they probably wouldn't have popped 4, 5, 10 years ago. You've seen a change in a lot of the fighters' bodies and physiques. You've seen a lot of fighters go away. I'm not going to mention names. But then the bad side comes, you know. Well, the first bad side I'll say is it can sometimes go a bit too far. Like, you guys picking up stuff. When you get popped for weed, say, for example, stupid. when you're getting popped for just like daft sort of things that people come up with from time to time that don't even have anything to do with steroids or performance enhancing drugs or anything like that, but then you've got that stigma attached to your name. That's obviously not good for fighters, and it takes a lot to shake that off. It takes a lot to shake off that reputation. And the other thing we're seeing now is what I'm considering to just be absolute fucking shite. It's just bullshit. It is. John Jones has tested positive on 3 separate drug tests. And now the latest one this time round is that he took oral turinabol and it has this pulsing effect that lasts for so long, or whatever the argument was. I've heard it all. I've heard all the big experts talk about it. I've read into it all. I've heard Jeff Nowitzki on Rogan's podcast. Listen, I'm not, by any stretch of the imagination, let me just make this clear, I'm not a steroid expert. I'm really not. I don't profess to know anything about performance-enhancing drugs or the science behind them. I probably never will know even 1% of what, you know, these experts know. But what I can tell you is, if you apply your common sense to the situation, it's 3 failed drug tests and it's still in his system. Whatever a picogram is, it could be the smallest thing in the world. You could crack open a grain of salt and fucking throw it in the bath, throw it in an Olympic-sized swimming pool, or throw it in the Atlantic Ocean to sink to the bottom where the fucking Titanic is. It doesn't matter. He's still got a performance-enhancing drug apparently pulsing through his system. He shouldn't be in there in the first place. He shouldn't. And no one else is testing positive for picograms of oral turinabol or clenbuterol or DECA or testosterone, HGH, whatever else it is that the kids are dozing with these days. It shouldn't be in there. It shouldn't be in there. As far as I'm concerned, John Jones, you know, I'm a huge fan of John Jones. I remember the first time I ever watched John Jones was when he was elbowing Brandon Vera's face off about 10 years ago. And I knew then, I was like, Jesus Christ, man, this guy is special. He's going to take some stopping in the 205-pound division. Obviously, that proves to be right. He's never been beaten. You know, he's got 1 loss on his record, but that was when he was also elbowing Matt Hamill's face off and got disqualified for throwing the wrong kind of elbow, apparently. He's unbeaten. He's a superstar. He's absolutely fucking brilliant. He's tremendous. He's creative. He's strong. He's powerful. He's fast. He's got all the attributes that you'd want in a fighter, but he's tested positive on 3 drug tests. So how long are we going to let him get away with it? You know? And you can make the argument that he's faced PED users in the past before. Well, all right. Like, yeah, he's faced like Belfort, and you can make the argument that he was trying to level the playing field at one point in his career. I could well believe that at one point in the UFC, before USADA came in, that everyone was trying to do something to at least try and level the playing field with everyone else. Okay, fair enough. But we're supposed to be, you know, USADA coming to the UFC, we're supposed to be cleaning up the sport now, and this is just, it's just muddy in the waters. It's just muddy in the waters, and it's even worse now because it's so clear that there's just one guy who's already supremely talented who's also got the benefit of the doubt now on 3 occasions. And yeah, I know he's been banned, but not as much as he should have been. I know he's been exonerated. Should he have been? I don't know. Some of the excuses have come out like about, you know, gas station fucking penis pills and shit like that. Are we buying it? Are we really buying it? And does he need it? He doesn't need it. Like, he doesn't even need to go down that route as far as I'm concerned. He's just so talented. But the thing is, there's an asterisk against everything he's ever done in his career now, because we'll just never know. The only fight we know for certain on paper from drug tests that he was clean was the Jovin St. Preux fight a couple of years ago. And by John Jones standards, although he dominated the fight and I thought it was a good performance, by John Jones standards, it was an ordinary performance. It wasn't what you saw when he was KOing Gustafsson last weekend. It wasn't what you saw when he head kicked DC into oblivion. It wasn't what you saw when he dominated DC before that. It wasn't what you saw when he went through his run in the 205-pound division before all the trouble started years ago, going in for the likes of Shogun, Rampage, Evans, Rashad Evans. Lyoto Machida dropped him like a sack of shit on the floor after choking him out in the second round. You know, it wasn't that level of performance. It was a good performance against a solid, maybe top 10 light heavyweight. And that's the only time we know for certain that John Jones was clean. And that's the asterisk forever now. What happens going forward, I don't know. You know, hopefully this won't pop up again. This thing, this metabolite, M3, I think Jeff Nowitzki said on the Rogan podcast. Hopefully that won't pop up again now in the future. And, you know, he'll be tested and he'll be clean. And because it's fair. It is fair. And he's going to be coming back soon as well. You know, I think it was just confirmed this morning, actually, that he might be facing Anthony Lionheart Smith at UFC 235. Excuse me, in the headliner there. You know, we want a clean sport. We want to see the best fighters, but everyone fighting on a level playing field. John Jones said that he wants to fight 3 times this year. Obviously, that would start at UFC 235, which is in a couple of months' time. And we just want to see him fight regularly now. Like, who doesn't want to see the best fighters in the world fighting regularly? But it has to be fair. And that's my take on it. So my take, I just went off on a tangent for, what are we, like 15 minutes into the podcast now? I apologise. But that's how strongly I feel about it. I'm just not buying what all these experts and everything are saying. I'm using my common sense and I'm saying, well, what's it even doing in this system in the first place? How long are we going to let him get away with having it in his system? It's just not adding up to me at all. So, sticking with John Jones, Luke Rockhold come out of a cheeky little video this week saying that he will be moving up to the 205-pound division. And I believe he said something along the lines of, I'm coming for your princess, or something weird. On a serious note, great move by Rockhold. You know, he's a big 185er. He's always been a massive middleweight. I think he'll look fantastic at light heavyweight. The division is very bare at the moment, so he's going to be a solid addition. You know, the top three are light heavyweight, are pretty much set in stone. You've got Jones, you've got DC, you've got Gustafsson. Outside of that, you know, you've got the likes of Uzdemir, you've got Reyes, and it gets a bit tricky outside of that, to be honest. You got Tyson Pedro, I suppose. He's an interesting sort of up-and-coming product. And I think Rockhold's going to slip into the division really well. I'm hoping Weidman, on a completely separate note, I'm hoping Weidman follows him as well, to be fair, because, you know, Weidman needs to do something to rejuvenate his career, and I think a move to 205 would be brilliant for him. Or a permanent move to 205, rather. But Rockhold, sticking to Luke Rockhold, he's going to be a fantastic addition to the division. I think, you know, give him someone first that'll just test the waters, maybe like a Glover Teixeira. Glover Teixeira actually would be a perfect fight for him, just to see where he stands in the division, and then you can give him to one of the monsters at the top and try and set him up for that title fight in 2019. I mean, if Rockhold could do it, Luke Rockhold and John Jones is a tremendous fight. It's a lot of stylistic attributes that both bring to the table that make it very interesting. Obviously, John Jones would be the heavy favourite, but, you know, Luke Rockhold is world class, mate. You can't not back him to some degree in any fight. So it's going to be an interesting 2019, I think, with Luke Rockhold going up to 205. That's a solid addition to the division. In other news this week, Amanda Nunes, after her shellacking of Cyborg last week, she's come out and said that she's the greatest of all time. I wouldn't argue with her, to be honest, would you? Cyborg was the undefeatable monster. You know, had been number one in the 145-pound division for a long time, ever since years and years and years ago. She won the title in Strikeforce. And what Nunes did to her last weekend was incredible. I think it was 51 seconds, was it? Just consistently hurt her and then put her down with a big right hand. I was actually at a mate's house at the time. And I think I've been banned from his house because it was about 5 in the morning. he had family upstairs sleeping, and I believe the words coming out of my mouth at about 130 decibels was, "Oh shit, oh shit." Right hand after right hand after left hand, perfectly placed punches. You know, she just looked, even though it was chaos in there, and it looked like utter chaos. You watch the fight back. It's not hard to watch the fight back. I've watched it back about 30 times just on Twitter alone. It was the placement of the punches, the shot selection. Under fire like that, you know, Nunes has just gone. She's come a long way from the Nunes that lost to Katsingana. She's gone on a tear. She's beaten arguably three of the best that, you know, women's MMA has ever seen now. Misha Tate, Ronda Rousey and Cyborg. And it's hard to argue that she's not the greatest of all time now. She's 135-pound queen. She's a 145-pound queen. And I don't know what's next for her, to be honest. There seems to be only three options. The one I'd like to see first, excuse me, I think Cyborg, because of how dominant she was for so long, I think Cyborg deserves a rematch. I also think it makes sense if you're going to keep the 145-pound division around, because outside of Nunes, you got Megan Anderson, you got Kat Zingano, you got Holly Holm, and that's it. So to keep it relevant, if you want to keep it going, I think Cyborg has to be the next fight. Now, I know Cyborg's run out of a contract, but put her in a one-fight deal. Cyborg has signed that. Put her in a one-fight deal, give it a chance to come back and reclaim her belt. And I want to see that fight again. The reason why I want to see that fight again is because Nunes, Cyborg didn't seem to have a lot of respect for Nunes' power. When Nunes caught her, Cyborg, instead of doing what she did, we'll use a Holly Holm fight for example. Instead of doing what she did in the Holly Holm fight, which was she got caught a few times in that fight, remained calm, stuck to the game plan. She just seemed to throw all her toys out the pram. It became a bit of a sort of, for lack of a better saying, whose cock is bigger contest, and she just went fucking piling forward for Nunes. Now, if she would have just stuck to her guns, stuck to the game plan, stayed calm, stayed cool, it could have been a completely different fight. But who knows, you know, Nunes has got a lot of power, and she might have just completely and utterly rung a bell, and Cyborg was like, and just started relying then on just pure instinct. But it'd be interesting to see if the second fight would go any differently. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? The only one who's got anything to lose, in my eyes, is Cyborg. Because if Cyborg loses twice, then, you know, it's tough. It's tough to know what you're going to do next. If Nunes was to lose, you know, she was expected to lose the first fight. She won it emphatically. Say she loses the second fight, it sets up the biggest payday that you will ever get for Nunes and Cyborg, in the fact that they'll have to run it back for a trilogy. One on one apiece. Let's see who's the best. Yeah, that'd be my first option. As much of a domination as it was in 51 seconds, I'd quite like to see that fight again. Your second option is to run the Shevchenko fight back. Two super close fights with Shevchenko. The first one I thought Nunes won all those years ago in the three rounder. Even though she faded in the third round, Shevchenko come on like strong late. I thought Nunes did just enough. The second fight I thought was super, super close. I actually thought Shevchenko shaded that one. I think they should be one-on-one apiece now. That's an option if you want to run that back. It's a little bit more interesting as well at the moment, because Shevchenko's just won the 125-pound belt. The only argument against it is it wasn't that long ago that Nunes and Shevchenko fought. So maybe you want to leave a little bit more time. Maybe let Shevchenko get a couple more defences of her belt at 125. Nunes get a couple of defences in at 135 and 145. And then it builds that up as a proper super fight. The third option is Holly Holm. Just because Holly Holm won her last fight. She's obviously got a tough fight coming up against Aspen Ladd. But if she was to win that fight, you know, her and Nunes have never fought. Stylistically, it's a brilliant fight. You know, it's the tactical acumen and kickboxing ability of Holly Holm, point kickboxing ability of Holly Holm versus, you know, the berserker style of Nunes. Not to say that that's Nunes' only talent. Obviously, she has tremendous power in her hands, but she's an excellent striker. Technically, she's superb, especially with her boxing and straight punches. And she's a beast on the ground as well. So I think there's a lot of things there, especially Holly Holm's takedown defense has got, it's got a lot better since she's been in the UFC, from fight to fight. So, and she's obviously a big, strong girl as well. Her clinch game up against the fence as well is very good. She tested Cyborg a lot, with that during their fight. I just think it's a very interesting stylistic matchup, and I think a lot of people will be interested in seeing it, seeing as those two haven't fought each other yet. And obviously Holly Holm is a big name. Of course she is. She's fought Cyborg. She was the one that dethroned Ronda Rousey with that head kick a few years ago, so that's an option as well. I wouldn't mind seeing any three of those, to be honest. My top pick would be Cyborg, though. I hope that's what the UFC goes with next, but we'll see. Next on the news agenda, I'll keep this short and sweet, 20 seconds or less. Conor McGregor has had his second child. Congratulations, Conor and Dee. Hope you're all in perfect health. Fantastic to hear. Expect to see Conor out of the octagon now for the foreseeable future as he prepares to bring his second child properly into this life. So, congrats. Anderson and Zingano. So Megan Anderson and Kat Zingano obviously fought UFC 232. It was a very short fight. Megan Anderson landed a head kick which grazed Kat Zingano's eyelid, I believe. I apologise, excuse me. Got a bad cold and cough on today. Zingano's eye was all sorts of busted up afterwards. It was declared as a win for Megan Anderson. You know, talking about running it back, I think that's the most logical thing to do. We obviously didn't get a very satisfactory conclusion to that fight, so I think that's the best thing to do. I think the best thing to do with that as well is to build up a title challenger. So whatever happens with Nunes, whether she fights Holly Holm or Cyborg or Shevchenko or whoever else next, put Megan Anderson and Kat Zingano on the card underneath her, either as a co-main or on the main card underneath. Just to build up a title challenger, get everyone aware of the next person in line. I think that'd be the best thing to do. So that's that. I think that's a very good idea to run that one back. Volkan Ozdemir and Dominic Reyes are slated to fight each other. I'm just punching up the event now because I'm not actually sure when they are supposed to be fighting. So if we have a look at Dominic Reyes's record here. Let's have a look. So obviously Dominic Reyes, unbeaten so far in the UFC. Volkan Ozdemir has been beaten a couple of times. Obviously had his title challenge against DC not so long ago. An admirable effort, but obviously come up short against DC. DC is just a class above everyone in the division, not named Gustafsson and John Jones. So him and Ozdemir, as far as I can see. God, I'm terrible at Googling today, it appears. Let's have a look. UFC on ESPN 5, Volkan Ozdemir versus Dominic Reyes, and that will be March 16th in London. It's good. If that's the main event, that's a good main event, to be fair, for the UK fans. It's the right fight to make in the division. You know, Dominic Reyes, he's looked superb so far. Obviously, his last fight against Ovi St. Preux, he looked fantastic. Volkan Ozdemir is just that little notch up now in competition. He's going to be the lily pad he needs to step on to get to the top of the division. So your likes of Gus and John and DC, this is the next step up now. Good fight for both, to be honest. I mean, if Ozdemir can beat Reyes, he's back up in title contention. A really impressive, unbeaten young fighter, and he turns him away. You know, that's a good win for Ozdemir. If Reyes can beat Ozdemir, he's beaten a former title challenged for the title not so long ago. And like I say, that should set him up for title contention. So it's a perfect fight, to be honest. Good UFC matchmaking there. Khabib's made the news this week, or shall I say his manager, Ali Abdelaziz, again, pretty much saying that Conor's next because he wants money fights. And Tony Ferguson's just not even a consideration. I don't even know where to start where Ali Abdelaziz is concerned. He runs his mouth too much. He's a manager, isn't he? He's constantly like mouthing off to fighters and stuff on Twitter and social media and in interviews. And come on, bud, you are a manager, so let's manage. Don't be mouthing off to fighters. Don't be pretending that you're a fighter. At least not on the level that these guys are, because you're not. And it's just embarrassing. Like, let Khabib and the stable of fighters that you manage speak for themselves. Until Khabib comes out and says, I want Conor next. I'm just not buying a word that you say, because it's no one wants to listen to you. And you talk too much. So, that's that. On the actual fight side, Khabib and Conor 2. Would I watch it again? Yeah, cool. I mean, we all would. We all would. And it's a big fight. And yes, it's the money fight and everything. But listen, there was a time when Khabib was unbeaten. I mean, he's still unbeaten, obviously. But there was a time when he was unbeaten and upcoming. And he just wanted his shot at the title. Now Tony Ferguson's that man. Tony Ferguson was, in my opinion, wrongly stripped of the title because of the injury that he sustained before he was supposed to face Khabib last April. Now Tony's on a 12-fight winning streak. Tony is the only fight that all the fans want to see. Khabib and Tony has to be next. It has to be. You've got Khabib, who's 25-0 now. You've got Tony Ferguson, who's on a 12-fight win streak. He's not been beaten since years and years ago by Michael Johnson when he suffered an injury in that fight, severely compromised him. He might even be on a 13-fight win streak now. I think he won a few before that, actually, so he could be on a ridiculous win streak now. Regardless, Tony Ferguson's the fight. That is the fight. That's the fight that we all need to see. You know, as far as I'm concerned, it's number 1A and number 1B, Khabib and Tony Ferguson, who's the best lightweight in the world. We've been dying for years to see this fight. It has to happen in 2019. If there's one fight I could pray to the MMA gods for, you know, get down on my knees, look up to the sky and be like, please, 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 please make this happen. I beg of you. I will give you anything you want. I will sacrifice my bleeding house and mortgage in my car. Please give me this fight. It has to be Khabib Nurmagomedov and Tony Ferguson. It's a superb fight from a stylistic point of view. You know, the build-up would be great. I'm sure it'll do a lot of numbers. A lot more fans know about Tony Ferguson now, especially after his fantastic performance against Anthony Pettis on the Khabib-Conor undercard last time on the main card, rather. That's the fight everyone wants to see. I can't say it enough. I think I've just said it about 15 times in a two-minute spell. Khabib, Tony, book it. Chad Mendes retired this week, and I think it is the right thing to do for Chad. Now, I don't know what he's got going on outside the UFC. I believe he's got a hunting business. He's got some money tied up in some hunting endeavours. Obviously, he's a big hunting advocate in America. If he's making the money from that, good for him. Not that Volkanovski's not an elite fighter. Obviously, he certainly is. But Chad Mendes in his career, he's lost twice to Jose Aldo, arguably the featherweight greatest of all time. He's lost to Frankie Edgar, one of the greatest of all time. He's lost to Conor McGregor, one of the greatest of all time. He's beaten everyone else. But now that he's lost to Volkanovski, it's a long way back. It's a long way back. If he wanted to try and get back to the title now, you're talking 2 or 3 fights, and then he might get a contender matchup, maybe against Volkanovski again. Maybe, if Aldo's still around at 145, get him, Moicano or someone like that. But it's a whole lot of fighting. It's a whole lot of putting miles on your body. It's a whole lot of taking concussions and damage just to try and get to the point again where you're challenging for the title. Mendes, he's been there. He's done it. He's seen it all. He's challenged for the title 3 times now. He's been successful on every unsuccessful on every occasion. He's got nothing to hang his head about. He's had a fantastic career. He's one of the best 145-pounders to ever do it, from his old days in the WEC all the way through to the UFC. He's brought entertainment every time. Was arguably involved in the greatest or the most entertaining featherweight title fight of all time, Jose Aldo, their second go at it a couple of years ago. That was a fantastic fight, and he come so close to dethroning Aldo. And, congratulations to Chad Mendes in his retirement. I think it's the wise thing to do. I think it's the correct decision. And I think I speak for a lot of MMA fans when we say, wish you all the best for the future. Last news story I've got. Alexander Gustafsson is pondering a move to heavyweight following his loss to John Jones at UFC 232. I think that's a good move. I don't think there's anything else at light heavyweight for him now. It was a pretty conclusive victory for John. You know, everything aside with the PEDs and whatever else is going on. It's twice he's lost to John Jones now. He lost to DC. He's come as close as he can get to winning the title. His best shot is probably heavyweight. How long DC's going to be around now, I don't know. He's talking about retiring after his next fight. Whether that's going to be John Jones or Brock Lesnar, I don't know. John Jones has obviously talked about stepping up to heavyweight as well, but it'd be a good division. And you never know how people are going to look at a weight class above or below, do you? I mean, there's sometimes when fighters drop weight and they look superb, sometimes fighters put on the weight and they look superb as well. We've seen loads of instances of that over the years. It could be that Gus goes up to heavyweight and he's an absolute monster. We don't know. And it's a good weight class to go up to at the moment because, you know, Gus, I don't know how old Gus is. I think I might be wrong. I think he's about 33 or 34. Hopefully not much older than that because I don't want to see him retire anytime soon. But everyone at heavyweight, you know, are golden oldies, aren't they? It's the golden oldie division. You know, you still got like the likes of Andrei Arlovsky hanging around. Stipe's not too old. Obviously, he's a top of the food chain fighter at heavyweight. Derek Lewis, just loads of good matchups up there as well for him. Derek Lewis, Alexander Volkov's a good fight. Francis Ngannou, Cain Velasquez is making a comeback. DC's obviously still there. Like I say, John Jones has talked about moving up. That division could be absolute fire within the next couple of years. It's not going to do light heavyweight too much justice, I think, if everyone leaves and goes up to heavyweight. Where that leaves the 205-pound division, I don't know, but I think it's a good move for Gus. I think he does need to change something up to reinvent himself, and unless he's got 20 pounds to lose, which I very much doubt because he's a big, big boy, to go down to middleweight, this is the right move for him, I think. And that is it. Excellent comeback podcast. Loads of interesting stuff for me to get my teeth sunk into there. I hope you've enjoyed it. Just a little recap of what's been going on in the MMA world with the news over the last week or so as well. No events coming up this weekend. Next weekend, nothing, I don't think either. I don't think we've actually got anything until TJ Dillashaw and Henry Cejudo, which is a couple of weekends on. So podcast next week, you'll see much more the same of this, just a breakdown of what's been going on in the fight world. And then obviously after that, we'll break down some fights as well. Like I say, TJ and Cejudo coming up. We've got some good boxing coming up as well. The big fight that's coming up is Broner and Pacquiao. Obviously, I think that's the 19th of January. So we'll have a quick look at that as well, and the implications for both of those fighters, win or lose. We'll take a quick look at that as well. Obviously, boxing, I mean, what a year for boxing it was in 2018. So many good fights, so many weight classes, you know, coming out of the dark times and into the light. You know, heavyweight's never been better. You got a monster in Usyk, obviously, cruiserweight. The 160 to 168 pound divisions were buzzing with what was going on with Canelo and Triple G. Everything in and around those weight classes as well. You know, the likes of the Charlo brothers having good performances last year. Controversy aside, but we can get into that another time. And then you've got the lower weight classes as well. They're looking fantastic. 147's looking brilliant at the moment. You've got the likes of Crawford. Mikey Garcia had a fantastic year, 2018. Lomachenko as well, obviously. He's just looking phenomenal. He's looking better and better every fight. Warrington and Frampton, for you UK fans, that fight was unbelievable. Might be the fight of the year. So boxing's in a good place as well. So I think it's something that I'm going to focus on a lot more going forward. Obviously, it's been very MMA heavy, but I realise there's quite a few boxing fans that probably listen to the podcast. Or even if you don't fancy any of the boxing, you know, maybe something I say, maybe something I break down, maybe some fights that I point you towards might persuade you to go and have a look at some fighters. Who knows? There's tons of combat sports out there. There's so many good fights coming up. There's so many good fighters to look at in 2019. I think combat sports in general is in a fantastic place at the moment. So really looking forward to kicking off the podcast now on a brilliant foot, as I think we have done here for 2019. Really looking forward to a whole new year of brilliant fights, brilliant news. shocking developments, pretty much everything that we had in 2018, I think we're going to have this year and more. And that is me for today. My name is Chris Collins. You have been listening to the Colcast, and I'll speak to you soon.